නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස probably you can remember that we were discussing another sutta which is related to samadhi uddesa vibhanga sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya. And there actually Buddha made a very short description, and then that is basically explained by Mahakacchana, the Arahant Mahakacchana. And then actually there are very interesting findings are there, and one important thing is related to the Samadhi, the Jhana. And how one can become stuck, internally stuck, while one is in samadhi. And on the other hand, how one can not internally stuck while one is in samadhi. Now this is very much like at the first, we don't know much about the samadhi and we don't know how to balance faculties. So as a result of that, when samadhi arises, there is a significant amount of attachment towards that, because it is so blissful, so people can use it to sort of escape from the whole world, and it is quite enjoyable, blissful. As a result of that, they attach to samadhi, and whatever the different kinds of feelings, perceptions available there can become one's attractions. They start being delighted in it. So that is where Venerable Mahakacchana explained that is what is called the internally stuck, ajjattang santitam. On the other hand, he mentioned even when one is in that particular samadhi, he is fully aware and he is not internally stuck. As I mentioned last time, so while we are walking, so we can allow the walking to happen. It is conducted by the body and we don't need to involve in that. Rather, we can simply observe it as a third person. So we are experiencing various sensations, and we can equanimously observe each and every sensation, but the walking also happens. It's very much like detached observation. So same thing applies here. So samadhi is there, mind is concentrated, but without any attachment, without preparing any kind of sanyojana fetters, or being considered about the samadhi, or getting internally stuck. So one can basically continue in detached observation. So this is something that we highlighted during the last discussion with respect to Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta. So there's another interesting sutta dealing with the concentration, Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, available in Anguttara Nikaya. So there Buddha talks about four kinds of samadhi. There are these four developments of concentration. What four? There is a development of concentration that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. And there is a development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. Third one, there is a development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension. Fourth one, there is a development of concentration that leads to the destruction of taints. Now we can see samadhi can be used for many purposes. It is not just the being blissful, but it is some necessary requisite for our practice, and we need to know how to properly use it. There are many benefits available in samadhi, therefore that's why it is a must to prepare a samadhi, have it, and after having it, keeping it under control or keeping it within our supervision without allowing it to overpower us, overwhelm us, and keeping it under the supervision of mindfulness, keeping mindfulness and wisdom in front. So these are some essential factors that we need to consider. So here in this particular sutta, Buddha discusses four types of samadhi, and the first one is basically helping to dwell happily in this very life. So the jhanas are the ones Buddha explained under this category, and therefore it is accepted that jhanas are quite blissful, it is quite interesting. One can earn it, one can be with it, one can enjoy it. And it will provide happiness within this, in this very life. So it's a kind of attainment. Because if you consider the typical worldly behavior, always what people are doing is attached to various sights, delighted with them, and getting distracted to that. So that is also discussed while we were discussing Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta. Bahiddha chassa vinyanam vikittam. They are the externally mind is distracted, and the consciousness is established in external objects. But here in the samadhi, in this jhana, the opposite can happen. That's what we discussed just now even. So without being internally stuck, how one can even enjoy it? How one can have a kind of a blissful abiding, happy abiding in this very life by means of the samadhi? So there Buddha explained, here secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in first jhana. Now, in order to attain first jhana, there are certain things, first of all, we need to satisfy. So if we consider the typical environment, mental environment, so we are constantly subjected to five hindrances. Kamachanda, Vyapada, Teenamidda, Uddacca, Kukkuccha, Vichikiccha. So we need to address these before we get on to samadhi. So it's a must, because that's why secluded from sensual pleasures and secluded from unwholesome states. So that basically talks about kamachanda and the other rest of the nivaranas. So one important, say, prerequisite or precondition for attaining first jhana is to overcome those five hindrances. So how one can overcome five hindrances? So basically, sila helps in one extent. In some side, one side where you are trying to minimize your bodily and verbal misconduct, but now you need to handle the mind. So that is where the concentration is important. And there are five factors actually we can discuss in order to overcome hindrances that we have to have available in our mind. So they are basically counteracting the hindrances. So typically our mind being governed by five hindrances, now we have to develop certain opposite qualities which then will overact or sort of counteract between different hindrances. Now one aspect is we are recognizing a particular meditation object. Say we are practicing samatha meditation and assume that we are taking breath as our meditation object. So it is necessary to again and again apply our mind to the breath. So when we apply our mind to the breath, again mind gets distracted because breath is not an interesting object. But again and again, we have to pay attention to breath. So it is therefore kind of a struggle at the beginning because we are not used to observe breath. Breath being a very ordinary experience, it is not interesting. It's not exciting, so mind continuously get distracted. So these are the initial problems we have. The mind is overpowered by kamachanda. And on the other hand, mind has some lethargic attitude because breath is not interesting, it's not exciting. So it's kind of a lethargic atmosphere could arise in the mind. But the important thing is breathing happens again and again. So we can't stop it. So breathing happens naturally again and again. So we should be readily available to observe it. So that is something actively we have to continue. Say when in-breath happens, we should be there. When out-breath happens, we should be there. Again in-breath happens, again out-breath happens, again in-breath happens, again out-breath happens. So likewise, continuously we have to apply our mind onto the breath, and maybe later we can even recognize certain aspects of the breath. But here when we are considering the samadhi, we are not much interested about those characteristics of the breath.
Now, typically, when we are discussing Anapanasati, which is more biased towards the Vipassana, we are more concerned about the characteristics, whether it is long, short, and whether it is the middle, the say the beginning, the middle, the end, whether it is warm or cool. So likewise, various characteristics are there with respect to the breath. So we are very much investigating those characteristics. That is where the sampajanya, clear comprehension, and again the various other insights going to arise. But here, when we are samadhi oriented, we are not interested in searching or examining those characteristics. Rather, we simply want to concentrate the mind. We simply want to keep the mind at one point, we can say. So we are keeping it at our nostril as much as possible, and then in breath happens, and we are very much given the task of observing the breath while being at the nostril. And then out breath happens, again we are observing the out breath. So likewise, a task is assigned to the mind to observe breath again and again. So therefore, this task helps to avoid any kind of lethargic attitude. Any laziness, srotha torpor, can be overcome when this applied thought is available again and again. So one important thing therefore is the vitakka. Vitakka, the applied thought, is something constantly activates the mind, constantly allow the mind to be occupied with some action. So that is necessary at the beginning. We can't stop all the actions immediately. Rather, we need to allow the mind to involve in some useful action or beneficial action. Beneficial in the sense at this moment it is beneficial. Otherwise, mind get distracted externally and getting deluded by various sights, sounds, etc. But right now we are taking a small object, very kind of subtle object, and again we are applying our mind there. So when this is become successful, then mind is fairly active because breathing happens again and again. And as a result of that, srotha torpor slowly calms down, srotha torpor disappears. And now, when we are aware of breath, say in breath, when we are aware of out breath, now we need to examine it. Now the examination part starts. First of all, we need to establish mindfulness. That happens through the vitakka. Now suppose you are able to maintain your attention for 50 breaths, 100 breaths continuously. So that means fair amount of vitakka, you know how to handle it. And now you need to start examining it. You know exactly this is in breath. You know exactly this is out breath. Actually, when we are more oriented towards samadhi, as I mentioned, we are not giving much emphasis on the contents or the characteristics. Rather, we are trying to fix our mind, make it one-pointed. And here, examination therefore does not mean we are trying to recognize the whether it is hard, whether it is soft, or whether it is long, or rather say warm or cool. Rather, it is very much like the very basic kind of characteristics, whether it is long, whether it is short. So those are maybe all right, but it's very much like surface glancing, not really going deeper, but little glancing like thing, because the samadhi mind is more soft and it doesn't really penetrate. Penetration is another aspect that we have to talk when we are discussing the Dhamma Vichaya. That is when the mind is concentrated, that we have to initiate another aspect. But in the samadhi, if we are purely considering samadhi, so the samadhi aspect is more at the surface level, just being one-pointed, just being in one object. So that is what we are talking here. Now we are examining the very surface level of the breath, and when in-breath is there, we are simply observing that. When out-breath is there, we are simply observing that. So that basically avoid any kind of vichikicca, the doubt, because doubt, when it is present, it always have various other, say, thoughts generated, whether it is in-breath or whether it is out-breath, so we don't know. and what I am going to do next. Is it the correct method? Maybe like that. So there may be various doubts. Is the technique going to work for me? So likewise, there may be various doubts with respect to the meditation, with respect to the Dhamma, whatever it is. But when we are fully occupied with the examination, this close examination of the breath, so that doubt doesn't have time. And we are occupied, we are basically involved in this careful observation, and there also we get some kind of a confirmation, okay, this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath. So I'm pretty sure about it. So yeah, we are pumping that sort of an assurance to the mind. So no need to be doubtful about it. You know exactly this is the in-breath. You know exactly this is the out-breath. We are not thinking too much about all philosophical or any kind of more advanced things, but rather we are trying to keep the mind in more basic things and trying to know, okay, this is, I haven't misunderstood it as out-breath. This is the in-breath. I'm pretty sure about it. So that kind of an assurance helps to overcome vichikicca. And then as we are continuing this, now slowly there could be a little samadhi arising, mind calms down and no distractions and again no doubt. So as a result of that, naturally there could be a little bit of happiness, rapture going to arise. So at that kind of an environment, there can't be any ill will. So ill will is completely, subsided because of this rupture. So when rapturous environment, when the happy environment is available within the mind, so that basically avoids any kind of ill will going to arise in the mind. So therefore ill will also is not available. Now we can see that three defilements or three hindrances have subsided. And when the mind is comfortable, when the body is comfortable and feeling happy, so the internal environment is very sort of blissful, and the mind recognizes that. So basically why our mind distracted is because that it doesn't find happiness within. Now suppose you are taking care of a child. So when he comes home, assume that he is returning from school. And once he returned from school, if the home environment is very, appreciative. Say he likes to stay at home. Mother is very good, father is very good. The parents are quite loving. Food is available. Maybe some enjoyment is available. All the necessary safety and other well-being is available within the house. Then the child doesn't need to go out in search of various other pleasurable things, because enough happiness, contentment, satisfaction is available at home. So similarly, when the mind returns to the meditation object, if the internal environment is quite satisfying, say there is no tension, there is no any agitation, there is no any friction, and there is no doubt, and the environment is quite joyful, then mind recognize it. Then if it is getting distracted, again kind of an unsatisfaction, some sort of friction, ill will, lust. So the outside is more burning with respect to inside. So after mind recognize that, now it starts preferred to stay inside rather than going outside, because going outside he recognizes it's sort of a torture. Now, when internally happiness, when internally some sort of satisfaction, contentment is available, then the distractions are becoming less and less. So the restlessness, kukkuccha, uddaccha kukkuccha is overpowered, abandoned, because internally you are satisfied, internally contented, internally happy. So the sukha available within the samadhi is therefore counteracting what you call the uddaccha kukkuccha, restlessness and regret. because you don't need to regret, you don't need to become restless, because internally there's a very interesting environment, happy environment, comfortable environment. So mind is quite happily staying inside. Now, after all these things are satisfied, now mind is also one pointed, so it doesn't want to distract to other objects. So basically it only uses breath. It is basically one pointed with breath. So one interesting aspect of Kamachanda is always not being with one object. It always want to go for many objects, not satisfied with one thing, but wants to have many things. But when concentration, this ekaggata, is available, that means it can stay now long time with in-breath, it can stay long time with out-breath, doesn't want to get distracted. So it's a complete opposite being generated within. So the characteristics of Kamachanda, sensual desire, is to jump from one object to the other object, enjoying one object, and if it is getting little diminished, and then you go for another object. So this is the nature of the Kamachanda. But on the other hand, if we consider the ekaggata, so it can simply stay with one object for a long time, doesn't ask for another thing, like to stay in one object, one pointed. So that aspect being developed purposely at the beginning, and once it is fairly developed, now Kamachanda has no chance. That is also abandoned. Now basically you can see vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. Vitakka is the applied thought, vichara is the sustained thought, piti the rapture, sukha happiness, contentment, ekaggata the concentration or one-pointedness. So these are the jhana factors. And these jhana factors are exactly opposite to hindrances, as we discussed. So that is why we need to develop these jhana factors. And once jhana factors are available, we can say, now he is secluded from sensual pleasures. Kamachanda is not there. Secluded from unwholesome states. All the other hindrances are also abandoned. Now the mind has its own seclusion, and it is very much like safe from all the hindrances. A bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana. Now we can say, he is in first jhana. And now rapture and sort of pleasure is because available because the hindrances are not torturing the mind. Now typically when hindrances are there, always kind of a burning, kind of a aberration, kind of thing is there. Torturing is there, but now all those are abandoned, temporarily subsided. Instead, there is a very blissful internal environment is prepared. And these five factors are therefore available in first jhana. And so this is therefore is a pleasant abiding that one can have in this very life. Now, similarly, we can go to the second jhana, where Buddha mentioned, so when one is familiarizing, actually when one develops jhana, so he doesn't much aware of all this information, he simply say practicing anapanasati, but important thing is to maintain concentration, giving some emphasis to concentration, instead of the wisdom, since we are going more oriented towards samadhi. And after attaining that sort of thing, so immediately reflecting the jhana factors are also not recommended. So basically at the beginning, it's very much like you have to consolidate this practice. So if you are practicing samatha meditation, so it is not immediately you are inviting vipassana. So before you practice vipassana, you need to first of all establish in samatha. So I am talking samatha-oriented vipassana at this moment. So when we are purely practicing samatha meditation, so in investigation, say examination, recognizing all the anicca dukkha anatta, so that is not the target here. Rather, you are trying to maintain a very blissful, satisfying environment, and you even consider the meditation object is permanent and it is blissful. So it's taking more into the, say, happy side. not the negative side. So that is how the samadhi being more blissful. And once you are fairly capable being in that, say you attain the first jhana, be there for a considerable period of time, say half an hour, 1 hour, so like that. Then later, once you are confident, then you can slowly recognize what are the jhana factors. You are very much like now only the reflection starts. Like we discussed in the Uddesha Vibhanga Sutta, the second part. The first part is very much like you are stuck in the samadhi. Doesn't matter. Because if you know exactly this is doing for a purpose, it's all right. But later you need to have a kind of a detached observation. Now only you are recognizing various jhana factors. You are recognizing as a beginner, okay, what is this vitakka, applied mind. You are recognizing what is vichara, examination part. And you recognize as a kind of a rupturous environment available, maybe mentally and even bodily. Bodily may be kind of goosebumps available, maybe waves like little massaging like things are available. Mentally, you have kind of a happy feeling, certain satisfaction, blissful feelings. So these are the rupture side, the feeling part. And on the other hand, say you may recognize, okay, feeling sort of happy, contented. So that is the sukha part. And the mind is, of course, not distracted, it's concentrated. Ekagrata is there. So likewise, we need to, when one is practicing samatha meditation, one has to be fairly familiarized with these jhana factors, because it's a matter of operating on these jhana factors is what we can say as a development of to the other jhanas. So more one recognizes these jhana factors later, now he can observe them properly, recognize them properly, and he may understand this vitakka and vichara, applied mind and the sustained mind, is somewhat gross. Again and again, mind has to be applied to the meditation object. Again and again, very much like rubbing the object, so you need to do some kind of an activity. So the yogi may understand, okay, these are a little difficult, I mean, these are a little generating some friction. It involves more activity. How about just keeping the mind fixed? First, you may apply to a particular object. Once you apply it there, okay, it is fixed there. It's firm there. So that is where the second jhana comes into the picture. So after one recognizes the drawbacks of the, say, what you call vitakka and vichara, so you are sort of trying to abandon that and just keeping the mind fixed. Very much like stuck onto the object. So that is where subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana. So here thought doesn't mean that thinking, rather that is the applied thought. Only once you apply the mind to the particular object, then it is firmly established there. No wandering, no distractions. So it is firmly there. So again and again, you don't need to apply the mind. So applied mind, applied thought is therefore abandoned. Vitakka is not necessary now. Already mind is on the object. And vichara also not necessary, because you are not doing that examination part. Rather, you are quite firm that this is the meditation object. You are not distracted. You are not allowing vichikicca to happen anyway. And now you are fixed, firm. And this is the second jhana. It is therefore more strong samadhi is available when with respect to the first jhana. And it has kind of internal placidity. It has unification of the mind, more confirmed, more fixed, feeling more kind of confident. And it only has rupture and pleasure, the happiness. So therefore, it is more predominant. Previously, the rupture, contentment, so those might have kind of a shades of vitakka vichara, as a result of that you can't really enjoy it. But in the second jhana, so vitakka vichara is not there, therefore rapture and happiness is more predominant. One may really enjoy it. This is the second jhana. No, this is also, therefore Buddha mentioned, it's a type of jhana that one can be happy, dwelling happily in this very life. Now we can go for the third jhana. So while in the second jhana, as I mentioned, that also one has to familiarize for a long time. Not immediately go jump into the third jhana. That is not the way of proper practice. One has to fairly consolidate second jhana for a long time. Maybe staying 10 minutes first, maybe staying 15 minutes next, maybe staying half an hour, maybe staying 1 hour. And even some teachers, when they are more into the samatha practice, they even extend this time, maybe 2 hours, 3 hours. So they maybe extend this time. So it depends on the depth that one, where you want to go. And actually, we didn't discuss what are the methodologies one can attain. Actually, I have taken just the breath. Now that is another subject. Actually, we can little discuss here. Now one way of recognizing jhana, as I mentioned, is purely based on the jhana factors. So if the 5 jhana factors are available, we can say we are in the first jhana. If vitakka vichara are abandoned and only 3 jhana factors are available, say we can say we are in the second jhana. So likewise, based on the jhana factors, we can decide. But there's another interesting thing. What is the depth of the concentration? Now there are various methods one can attain first jhana. Say for example, in using anapanasati, you can attain first jhana. Using metta meditation, you can attain first jhana. And using kasina, you can attain first jhana. And even using asubha bhavana, you can attain first jhana. So likewise, it is not a single method available. There are many methods available to attain first jhana. Say if you are considering the metta meditation, say you are taking a particular person as the meditation object. Suppose you have a teacher, a respectable person to whom that you have sort of honest, sort of loving kindness, and you prepare an image of him in front of you. Image in the sense you mentally. So you feel like he or she is in front of you, and he is in a very pleasant demeanor. His face is very beautiful, maybe with a smile. So it's more conducive to generate this loving kindness. So that environment you are maybe artificially preparing, which is so appealing. Now you are applying your mind to that particular meditation object. May he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering. So likewise, you are again and again sort of applying loving kindness towards that person. So now slowly, so this is the application part, the applied thought. And later, when you are familiarized with it, now mind captures the image of that person. Now very much like there's a mental image of that person available, and to that mental image you are again and again paying a sort of wishing, may he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering. Now that vitakka also, now you can reduce in the sense you can shorten it. So the concentration, in order to increase, you need to shorten the phrase. Now you abandon 3 phrases, instead you may be using just 1 phrase. May he be well, may he be well, may he be well. So very much like you are conditioning the mind, so that your mind is so stick to that meditation object. And it's a kind of a happy abiding. And slowly, you can even now ignore the image of the person. You can simply dwell in that particular quality, metta quality. Now there's a metta quality available that is sort of significantly, traceable. You can recognize that quality, feeling, metta loving kindness feeling. So you are using that also. So that is predominant now. And again you are considering that kind of feeling and you are being there. And now mind slowly get absorbed to that. So when consider the first jhana which you attain through loving kindness, it has more blissful, loving kind of atmosphere than the first jhana what you have attained through anapanasati. Because anapanasati is more neutral object, so the rupture, maybe the loving kindness qualities, those are maybe only a little amount. But with respect to metta meditation, which is more blissful, more pleasant, because you have the mental quality of metta, loving kindness. Suppose you are using a kasina, say you prepare a disc or you are taking a color of the bone of your skeleton as a kasina. So likewise, many methods are available to practice kasina meditation. So you are again and again applying your mind to that kasina, and there, if we are able to attain first jhana, that is quite different from the anapanasati, different from the loving kindness. But the important thing is jhana factors are there. 5 jhana factors are there. So the amount of, or the depth of jhana, the amount of different jhana factors, their ratios may vary depending on the meditation object. As I mentioned, for say loving kindness, there may be more into the pleasant, say sukha, happiness, contentment. So those are more predominant. But in anapanasati, so if you are going to the other jhanas, say equanimity and all those things, so they are more predominant. Anapanasati being a very equanimous object. Kasini is also very same, where it is kind of an equanimous object. So likewise, when we are attaining first jhana, there are many methods available, not just one method. So that is also something that we can discuss. On the other hand, even if you are using anapanasati, to which depth are you going towards? Now, one can say, you are again and again applying one's mind to the breath. Now the applied thought is available, and you are examining the object, with vichara is also available, examination is also available. Now it is fixed, not moving, ekaggata available. So likewise, one can argue, okay, first jhana has attained. That is also agreeable, and some actually consider that as the first jhana. But on the other hand, there's another way. Particularly when one practices anapanasati, there is a nimitta going to arise, what we consider as the concentration sign. It may appear like a cloud, it may appear like a light, like the moon in the in the daytime. So likewise, different ways this nimitta, concentration sign, can manifest. So when that is available, so you can use that nimitta to attain first jhana. It is not the breath, the meditation object. Once the nimitta is fairly confirmed, nimitta is available, readily available for the yogi, so one can abandon the anapana, in breath and out breath. He can use this nimitta as the meditation object, which is more subtle. More deep concentrations are available when one is using this concentration sign as the meditation object. So you can see, even through anapanasati, so one can have 2 levels, that means. So purely without the nimitta, one can say, okay, the first jhana factors are available, therefore I am in the first jhana. But maybe less depth, concentration depth is less. And we can say concentration power is less. But suppose one recognize the anapanasati nimitta, concentration sign, and using that, slowly he consolidated the availability of the concentration sign, because the handling of nimitta is another subject. Because if you immediately start looking at the nimitta, it will disappear. So you have to again and again apply your mind to the breath so that the concentration is available. Concentration is powerful because the nimitta is a result of the concentration. So when the nimitta is available and it is not getting disappeared, rather it is firmly available and very much like it gets merged with the breath. Very much like breath and the nimitta are coming to the same line. They become into kind of alignment happens. Merging happens. Then only it is more advisable to look at the nimitta. Before that, if you look at nimitta, probably there's a risk of losing it. Now suppose the yogi properly handles it, was able to safeguard the nimitta, now again and again he can get the nimitta. Now it gets merged with the breath, and now the nimitta is more predominant. Slowly one can abandon breath, looking at the breath, being aware of breath, rather now one simply pay attention to this concentration sign, nimitta, which is more soft, more fixed, more subtle. Therefore, if one attains first jhana using nimitta, anapanasati sign, concentration sign, so that attainment of first jhana become more powerful, more stronger and more deep. So therefore, when we are considering jhanas, so what is the depth we are talking is another subject we need to look into. So it is not difficult, fair to say that all the meditation methods talk the same depth and same teachers are also talking the same depth. Different teachers recommend different levels, different depths. Certain teachers say, okay, it is enough to have 5 jhana factors. You don't need to have the concentration sign, nimitta. You can simply be with the breath, continue to observe the breath. 5 jhana factors are available and you can consider this is the first jhana. But certain other teachers are saying you are being with that, true, but that is only the neighborhood concentration, upachara samadhi. But now you need to recognize the concentration sign, and using that concentration sign you need to attain the first jhana. That is more deeper, more powerful, and that is their methodology. So therefore, these are little sometimes controversial, because different schools are having different thoughts, and it is quite difficult to say what is the most appropriate way of doing it. What I want to say is that what Buddha has recommended. Is Buddha recommended the first method, where you are keeping the 5 jhana factors and not much worried about the concentration sign? Or Buddha recommended jhana which is necessary to have concentration sign and you get absorbed to concentration sign, so you get more deep concentration? Is it what Buddha recommended? It is very difficult to recognize, because these sources are fairly very much like arguable. There may be evidences where Buddha talking about more into the awareness available, not being stuck in the samadhi. So you need to have some awareness. So the depth is therefore limited. So you can't be lost in the samadhi while you being observing it. So when you are observing the samadhi, when you have clear comprehension about the samadhi, so that indicate a little bit of shallow concentration. But on the other hand, when you are being lost in the samadhi, you being stuck in the samadhi, you being absorbed in the samadhi, there we can say, okay, you are in a bit deep concentration. But there are certain drawbacks where you don't have much clear comprehension. So therefore, both sides have, say, pros and cons. So when we talk about some of the subjects, so therefore we need to explore certain areas. What are the methods available to attain samadhi? What's the depth that we are talking? What's the length of period that we are talking? And whether the clear comprehension is available or not? Are you going to internally stuck or not? And on the other hand, another point that which is not relevant at this level but we need to know is that Buddha didn't consider samadhi as the most important thing. Today actually the whole session we were discussing the value of samadhi, but Buddha didn't consider samadhi as the primary goal, the main goal of the practice, main objective of the practice. Samadhi is just 1/5 of the faculties. So in the Buddha's technique, this balancing of 5 faculties very very important. So if you are lost in the samadhi, that is not the recommended practice. Rather you have to properly manage all 5 faculties, then only we can say we are in the proper samadhi. So therefore in the Buddha's approach, he hasn't given samadhi the more emphasis like in the previous other teachings. Now say for example, if you consider Alara Kalama, Uddakarama Putta, so they are the certain teachers who have attained Arupa Jhana even, and they consider that as the goal, that as the objective, and they didn't reflect more into the insights and the knowledge, the wisdom part, but they are more emphasis is on the concentration. But Buddha understood its drawbacks, and therefore he simply considered these concentrations are merely for a purpose. It has some practical value. It has some pragmatic value. It is not the goal. So that is why when one achieves samadhi, rather than considering that as the end of the whole practice, and you trying to consolidate that and being in that and always be there as much as possible, and considering that you have reached the end, Buddha say no, that is not the thing. You may have to have a fair amount of concentration, but that is for a purpose. The purpose is to observe the phenomena, the phenomena, maybe present moment phenomena, so that you can get a proper understanding about these phenomena. The approach is completely different. So he has more orientation towards the vipassana. As a prerequisite for vipassana, you are using samadhi. So recognizing defilements, recognizing the true characteristics of certain phenomena. So that is given more emphasis than being stuck in a particular samadhi. So therefore Buddha's approach is little different from the traditional samadhi oriented teachings which were available during the Buddha's time, and they were even using certain mystic powers, psychic powers, using the concentrations. And the first jhana, second jhana we discussed, and the third jhana also, we can say one recognized the drawbacks of the second jhana. And because the rapture and sukha, rapture particularly has little disturbances to the mind. So when one is familiarized with the second jhana, so one may recognize these drawbacks. So he may abandon that rapture and firmly be contented with the meditation object. And that becomes, therefore, just two factors available, sukha and ekagata. Therefore, that is the third jhana. And more one is familiarized with that, later one may understand, okay, sukha also little closer to hindrances. So he abandoned even sukha. Now he makes the mind more equanimous. Now he attains the fourth jhana. Now these four jhanas, therefore Buddha mentioned, these are the development of concentration that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. So I think we can wind up today's discussion here. So if you have any question related to today's discussion, now I like to open the session for questions. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a question from our side, so we'll give Venerable Sudhir a chance. Yes.
Bhante, I was wondering what you, Bhante, think about the because sometimes a good kind of like formula that I like to look through for the path is one of the most important suttas, the Samanya Pada Sutta, and the whole gradual training that repeats itself in the Dighnikaya through the first Sila Khanda. And for those, all the different jhanas, they have these similes. But then they also have like this instruction part where it says, and one kind of radiates and permeates this piti sukha throughout the body.
Correct.
And different things. And,
yeah.
And then it's also piti sukha, and then it's just the sukha, and then it's just the upekka. And I was wondering what Bhante thought about those.
Yeah,
if
yeah, those are interesting and those are available. So actually, I didn't go to that part. I mean, there are various similes that Buddha given so that we can recognize, we can understand the nature of the first jhana, we can understand the second nature of the second jhana, so likewise. So, say for example, in the second jhana, Buddha mentioned one is like a pool. Say, there is no water coming from the four directions, what is no raining internally, but pleasure is the water is available, very say pleasant, a cool water is available. It's a kind of a sprint where the overflowing also happened. So very much like the second jhana, you are not getting any satisfaction through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, those kind of things, and internally still happiness is available, internally still pleasure is available. So that is because of the all this firmness of the mind, no distractions, no hindrances. So mind is completely free from hindrances. As a result of that, the rapture is available. Internally, you are happy. You are not in search of happiness from outside. So likewise, Buddha has given very beautiful similes to each and every jhana. So using which actually we can understand how jhanic experience would look like. So, and again, when one attains first jhana, he can really compare this simile and his own experience and see what Buddha mentioned and what he attains has some similarities. And again, those are quite encouraging, appealing to practice jhana. So that is interesting, that is true. And not only in the Samanya Pala Sutta, many other places also Buddha mentioned that, say in Kaya Gata Sati Sutta, same similes are explained. So those are some of the practices, and we can admit, yes, this is the present abiding, and if you are managing it properly, you can of course take a very pleasant experience, blissful experience, and that is also time to time necessary, because say you are engaged with so many activities which is generating a lot of stress, mental kind of retardant kind of thing, worries, etc. So now you need to sort of abandon them and have a kind of a recharging of yourself, calming down, have a kind of tranquil experience. So then actually you can use jhana, and that is recommended. That is also recommended. But the important thing is how you not being driven by jhana, how you not being really attached to that. So you are not giving much emphasis on to the vipassana part. Because the other part is that now here we are talking jhana mostly purely say samatha point of view, but there are still other say samadhi experiences available in the vipassana side as well, and one can say that is more powerful, because in the samatha level still you are not having much of insight, much of support from coming from the wisdom. Therefore, it is very fragile. So, you may have very deep samadhi, but the moment you get out of it, and suppose that you engage with day-to-day activities, and there may be kind of a clash happen, there may be kind of a hindrance going to happen, and immediately you lose everything. Because the necessary vipassana support, necessary wisdom support is lack in your mind. But on the other hand, when one achieves
some amount of samadhi through a vipassana point of view, so that is more sustainable. And because you know exactly what is the reality of the world and what are its vulnerabilities, what are its shortcomings, and when things are going wrong, still you have that you have that firm support coming from the vipassana, you can bear things, you can sustain things. So that is why vipassana samadhi is more powerful in that sense, and again more have the wisdom support, and again even can be more deep. We can't say, I mean, only the samatha jhana is deep. Rather, vipassana jhanas are also very deep. Actually, vipassana jhana we will discuss separately in a separate day, because that is also kind of say controversial or arguable. Say, to what exactly you are talking vipassana jhana? Those are also we need to talk. So anyway, vipassana, I mean, we can call it jhana or whatever it is, but say in deep levels, say if you are talking about the sunyata samadhi, the emptiness concentration, say animitta samadhi, signless concentration, say appanhita samadhi, desireless concentration. Now these are very the deep concentrations, and to them also one can sort of attach to. That is something Buddha sort of warned, that the yogi should not even attach to them. That means fair amount of equanimous depth is there. Firm equanimity is there in the vipassana samadhi. So therefore, one can even attach to that. That has been discussed in the Anicca Sappaya Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya. Yeah, Majjhima Nikaya. So therefore,
kind of equated with the
Neva-sanya, yeah. So if one is attached to that such kind of a deep vipassana samadhi, Buddha mentioned, okay, he hasn't abandoned all the hindrance, rather the defilements, so he can reborn in the Neva-sanya, Na-sanya.
Even through panya he can do that, it says.
Panya?
In the sense that he doesn't have to go through all the jhanas before that, I think it says.
Yeah.
He can resolve upon it with wisdom.
Exactly. So that's why, I mean, he doesn't need to practice samatha first. He can simply start with even vipassana, but can attain this particular samadhi, and he can attach to that, can born in nivasanya nasanya. Not nibbana, yeah. So likewise, I mean, so we shouldn't think that the samatha samadhis are the only ones which are more powerful and which are only the talking of the real depth. But instead, vipassana samadhis are there which are more powerful and even are more stable because of it has the support coming from wisdom.
So I wanted to also mention that as well, that it's kind of like when you have these wisdom practices to balance and strengthen whatever samatha practices you have, then whenever you fall from that level of tranquility, you have something much stronger to catch you.
Exactly.
Because you don't get fooled the same way by all the problems that come up.
Yeah. That's the danger. Actually, when you are lack of vipassana knowledge, lack of wisdom, what happens is the samadhi, the mind, which is only, powered by samadhi, is more vulnerable. And more deceivable even. Now say for example, one aspect of samadhi is that the samadhi mind, the concentrated mind, is capable of recognizing even a subtle phenomena, so that it is more predominant, which is more visible, more clear to you. That's it necessary. Now that is why we are even preparing the concentrated mind for vipassana. Because this vipassana, the objects that we are using, the phenomena we are using for vipassana, is more subtle. So in order to recognize that, you need a very concentrated mind. The concentrated mind is capable of, it's very much like magnifying the object and give us a proper picture, clear picture. Now how about without wisdom, if this is going to happen to a lustful object?
You mean if you get attached to
it? Yeah. Now, not attached to, but say Samatha Yogi is there, and he has a very strong samadhi. Now, the samadhi now fairly inculcated to his mind. Now suppose he is on village Pindapata, a monk, and he sees a beautiful woman. Immediately his mind takes the signs of the woman, and now that is being strongly absorbed. So his mind being heavily attacked by lust when compared with the normal, ordinary person who is lack of concentration. So that is the danger in the samatha, which is purely, if one is practicing pure samatha, that is a danger. And it can happen to the hatred side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an argument with someone, the concentrated mind again and again look at that object, look at that hate object, again and again it becomes magnified within the mind. And ultimately he can go to the further argument, even to say quarrel and all sort of things. He is more vulnerable to such kind of situation, since he doesn't have much of wisdom support coming from. Instead, he has more magnifying effect available in the mind because of the samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why so when one is practicing pure samatha, he has to be very careful not to get involved on such kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
He has to have extreme kind of what you call the indriya samvara. Not to look at on those things and just carefully just be at your home and at your kuti,
mm-hmm.
without getting exposed to these things, because you are doing a very sophisticated job.
Mm-hmm.
But later, maybe practicing vipassana, when you are having fair amount of understanding, you can get exposed and see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you are overpowered with, or rather subject to some amount of lust, you can handle it,
mm-hmm.
because you are now experienced, you have support coming from wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But if one is simply a novice to the samatha practice and you don't have much of the, say, monk's experience, doesn't have much of social experience, you are not that matured, and simply practicing samatha, very risky.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why, or as I understand, like in the gradual training, one places a lot of emphasis on actually developing indriya samvara through wisdom,
mm-hmm.
so that you can actually understand these sense contacts that come.
Mm.
And also, even in some suttas, Lord Buddha recommends kind of building up both asubha and metta,
mm-hmm.
Before like going to deeper samadhis,
mm-hmm.
so that you can be wary of those lust and hate.
Mm-hmm.
That also helps with the indriya samvara.
Yeah, it's a kind of a tools available. So yes, I mean, if mind becomes lustful, then I mean, since you don't have much vipassana, so probably you can take asubha, so that you have kind of a counteracting mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if your mind become more with ill will, probably you can practice metta, again balance.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the, I mean, say primary level sort of tools that we can use when one is practicing samatha,
mm-hmm.
and so those tools should be readily available for the monk, for the yogi, because he still can't handle things simply by cittanupassana, dhammanupassana. He doesn't aware of this,
mm-hmm.
and he's not capable of doing it. And again, that power to happen, it takes time.
Yes.
Because the vipassana knowledges, it is not that you can immediately have, so it takes time.
Yes.
So therefore, if one practices samatha meditation, so this that's why the chaturarakka bhavana guardian meditations are maybe pretty useful. Buddha anusati, asubha, marana anusati, and metta. So those may be useful. You are keeping them as the guardians.
Mm-hmm.
So if mind get into any kind of an extreme, we can use these guardians to bring it back to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, I think also like one classic kind of example, like in the Jatakas or in old tales,
Like
the hermit who just goes to the mountains, they practice and they get all the iddhis, and then they go to town and they see a woman and they lose everything.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that is explained in the I think Mudulakkhana Jataka. Mudulakkhana Jataka is one interesting Jataka story where the Bodhisattva become a hermit, and as you said, he develops samadhi, concentration, and he comes to the city, and then the king was interested about him, and he invited to him for stay within the, you know, the palace, not really the palace, you know, the garden.
Yes.
What is it called?
Pleasure grove,
yeah. So stay there, and now king every day attend to him and sort of provide him food and everything. And one day king has to go outside and for to settle something. Now the queen is attending him.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately queen, this hermit has seen the queen's beauty and things have happened. Ultimately this hermit has lost everything and they were involving in the misconduct. So you can see the even though the concentrations are available, even the psychic powers are available, those are very vulnerable, fragile, because there is no enough wisdom. Power is coming from vipassana. So that's why the samatha practice, when one is involved with, have to handle very carefully without allowing those sort of pitfalls to happen. Yeah. Any question coming from your side, Jennifer?
No, but I have a question, Bhante. So
yeah.
Recently I've been attending some meditation classes. A few of the sessions, the teacher was telling us to only use one of the foundations of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we started with, you know, only knowing the body, and then in the next session, we then only focus on the feeling, etc. So, my question is, I guess typically I just note whatever is arising in the mind without necessarily focusing on one particular foundation of mindfulness. What is, I guess, the pros and cons of, you know, maybe focusing on one certain one and further developing that versus just kind of letting the mind, being aware of everything that arises in the mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, at the beginning, I mean, no, it's not advisable to jump to the other ones unless you are fairly familiarized with the first one. We need to better start with Kayanupassana. And when you are fairly confident, because Kayanupassana has many aspects, say through postures, you are trying to develop mindfulness using the postures. And then if you go to anatomical parts, you are having a different perspective about the body. So a fair amount of wisdom being developed, now abandoning the compact view, Ganasanya. And on the other hand, when one reaches Anapanasati, another level of understandings, is the insights, concentrations are available. Say, when you are going to Dhatumanasikara, so another deep, vipassana-oriented teachings are available. And so likewise, Kayanupassana itself is a very rich area that we can familiarize with, and we can advance ourselves fairly while using Kayanupassana. So while we are doing that, say for example you are involving in that for 1 year, just for example, and assume that naturally now mind tends to pick certain feelings rather than looking at the element characteristics. Say you were practicing Dhatu Manasikara, but instead of recognizing the element characteristics, now mind may give us kind of a report about what are the different feelings available. So that means mind has shifted towards that which is more natural. So that's why, I mean, we typically recommend that kind of an approach. As much as possible, you start with Kayanupassana, practice Kayanupassana, and while you are practicing Kayanupassana, naturally there's a shift could happen to Vedananupassana. And if it happens like that, then you can start practicing Kayanupassana and Vedananupassana as well. And probably if it's more biased towards Vedananupassana, now you can reduce the time that you are involved with Kayanupassana. Now you can spend more time in Vedananupassana. But on the other hand, there could be another situation. Say you are doing Kayanupassana and slowly the yogi starts to look at the mind. and what are the thoughts available, how thoughts are coming and going, and all sorts of findings happen naturally. There's a tendency to look at mind naturally, and he hasn't even practiced Vedana Anupassana. It doesn't matter even, because now you are fairly familiar with the Kaya Anupassana, you have certain skills developed, now you are practicing Chitta Anupassana, and it can be promoted. So therefore, if these tendencies are operating into the more favorable side, we don't need to ignore that, we can actually make use of that. On the other hand, say strictly saying, okay, you have to practice say 2 months Kaya Anupassana, another 2 months Vedana Anupassana, another 2 months Chitta Anupassana, another 2 months say Dhamma Anupassana. From the point, I mean, learning point of view, that is good, because then you have a fair amount of understanding on each Anupassana for a considerable period of time. Later, when you are familiarized with all these four, then you can allow the natural way of implementing it within yourself. Say you have some theoretical understanding, you have some limited practical understanding of each and every Anupassana, but later you allow the natural effect to going on. Say you start with Kaya Anupassana and then slowly allow the mind to naturally evolve to another side. Even if it skip Vedana Anupassana and it's going to Chitta Anupassana, it doesn't matter, because you know all the areas. Now you simply allow naturally the mind to grow itself. So I think these approaches would be, I mean, not harmful. You are being familiarized with all the four types, and later you can allow the mind to select what is preferred, and then it is a more kind of smooth involvement in the practice.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Pandit. That has been my personal experience, which is I started with Kaya Anupassana as my first Vipassana practice, and then naturally the mind just shifted to Chitta Anupassana. Mm-hmm. And I, at the time, I didn't know that it has shifted to Chitta Anupassana because I wasn't familiar
right.
with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where, when you are discussing with the teacher, then he need to instruct you, okay, now you have shifted to Chitta Anupassana, you just continue. It's good that it has naturally evolved. It is good. Now you need to give more familiarization to Chitta Anupassana as well, and you can practice Chitta Anupassana as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Pandit.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite Chitta Devi for the next question, please.
Thank you, Jennifer. So, Bhante, you spoke about this Vipassana jnana. Do they just arise on its own, or do we have to encourage the mind to grasp that knowledge?
No. You can't grasp. No, it is not kind of a grasping.
Sorry, that's wrong word. Encourage the mind to look for this dana.
It is not that it is available at somewhere and you are searching for that. Rather, you are preparing the conducive environment within your mind, and then only it may naturally arise. Now, say for example, you are simply quietly observing the characteristics of the feelings. Now again and again you are observing pleasurable feelings, you are again and again observing painful feelings, again and again observing equanimous feelings. So you simply do that, and you are not linking any of these to the book. You are simply having your own experience, keeping that as the most important thing, and as much as possible keeping the mind very, very quiet. Simply involved in this observation. On such situation, immediately assume that there's a thought striking the mind. Okay, how impermanent all these three categories are. Irrespective of the type of the feeling, all are extremely impermanent. So they all have the nature to come and go. They all have the nature to arise and pass away. So likewise, immediately there's a kind of a thought would arise, showing you, talking you, emphasizing you the impermanence. So this is, we can say, as the Vipassana knowledge, which has happened because you have allowed the mind to learn from the experience. You are simply prepared that necessary ground, the necessary field for mind to learn through its mere observation. Then striking happen, immediate understanding, insight happen, that is more natural, that is more significant, and that is more eye-opening time of insight.
Yes, now I have been doing, I have been just observing as you said, Bhante, when the body and mind is very quiet, you can see these feelings coming and going, and then you can also see the nature of this the breath. You know, it comes finer, and then it becomes very broken up. So you can see that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I observe all of that, and I see the rising and the passing away. That's very very clear.
Mm.
And also, I realize that there it is beyond my control, because it is just happening. And I observe whatever comes. I mean, I don't sort of say, ah, this is kind of prasanna, this is vedana, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just, at that moment, whatever is there, I observe that. So it could be the body, the feelings, as it comes, like the waves of, or sometimes you see a very, very quiet, beautiful mind. So then I just observe whatever comes.
Yeah.
Then maybe there might be some kind of a wave coming again, and then again I observe that. So that is my practice.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't disrupt anything. It just flows. So is that okay, Bhante?
Yeah, definitely. Because that is the environment that you are preparing. So you are simply allowing the mind to quietly observe. So, those phenomena could be bodily phenomena, those could be feelings, those could be thoughts. So many rich area is there. It is not simply the bodily phenomena, but any phenomena are available, valid, because all these are, you know, the conditioned phenomena. So it may be even internal phenomena, it could be even external phenomena, doesn't matter. All these phenomena are telling the same truth, showing the same behavior. So that is why it is not something that we are trying to understand which is unique to internal phenomena. Rather, whatever the phenomena, if it is conditioned, so they have this proper or the common characteristics, the common behavior. That's why, so when mind is not sort of having understanding about with respect to internal phenomena, easily he can apply that to the external phenomena as well. So likewise, Vipassana is not limited to any particular area. You can look at many areas, maybe within one session, as it happened, as you said, as it happened, whatever the phenomena are going to arise. So you are simply observing them. You are quite receptive. You are quite open, and you are observing any of those phenomena. Because actually what we can observe is these real experiential phenomena happening right now. So that is the subject of Vipassana.
Yes. So what I was trying to ask you, now we are seeing all these things. So is that what you are talking about, the jnana? I mean, all
no, no, no.
Things,
seeing,
jnana,
yes.
Else.
No, no. Seeing is one thing. Seeing is where you do the quiet observation, detached observation.
Yes.
So as you continue on this detached observation, insights may grow within yourself. So that is a kind of an experiential knowledge going to happen. And even it may arise, the insight may arise not while you engage in this practice. Maybe while you are relaxing at another moment, immediately kind of an insight might happen. But it has a great influence coming from this training.
So the insight is something that like an awakening, would that be right?
Yeah, we can say like that, yes.
Because then it's like your whole body and mind gets, it's a kind of experience which is not the normal experience, would that be right?
Yeah, we can say so, because you may strongly feel it, So kind of, that's why I said it's kind of an eye-opening experience. And immediately you feel kind of, say, at different levels Vipassana knowledges are discussed. I mean, you get certain understanding about the kind of mind and body, the name and form, or you get different insights about the conditionality, how impermanent things, how unsatisfactory things, how non-governable things, and how frightening things, and how, so likewise, so many different ways those can manifest.
So is that a kind of happiness also about there when you when these insights come? Would that be right?
It depends on the insight. There can be happiness as well. Now suppose you get an insight to let go of everything and you are now ready to do it. Previously you were frightened to do it and you are so attached and you feel frightened when things are say, sort of collapsing, when things are disintegrating. But later, once the mind become more mature, understanding of the conditionalities, the Patisamuppada, those things are more available, then now slowly mind starts letting go of it, letting go things naturally. Now fair amount of happiness can arise in the mind.
Yes, because when you see that everything is impermanent anyway, that isn't that also a kind of happiness or not really?
Yeah, yeah, we can say so. I mean, if you admit, rather than you trying to fight against it, once you admit things, how things are happening, and you are ready to accept it, then of course there is no friction, and you are very much like you are part of the whole thing.
And then there is also like sometimes you feel nothing's important, like that sort of a disenchantment or depression or whatever you want to say. There are times even in real life one can just these things suddenly say appear like that.
Correct.
Without you actually thinking about it.
Yes.
You suddenly find your feeling like that, and then sometimes it's a bit worrying as an ordinary human being. Is that right, Mama?
Can definitely. Because you know this balance, the proper mental balance, which is more conducive to arise vipassana or the insight, might not sometimes happen when we are struggling too much. While in the practice, probably we are trying hard to generate it. That is wrong. Actually, we simply have to have a very balanced, equanimous, contented mind of type of mind. So that is that would be the more conducive environment. But sometimes we are unnecessarily putting a lot of effort. So therefore, mind is little stressed. So the vipassana insights may not happen. But later, suppose you done that, and later you finish your session. Now you are going to have a cup of tea. There, assume that the mind is getting the proper balance. The letting go has happened.
Yes.
So you have abandoned the practice now. So you see, it's also an abandonment. You don't have much worrying about the vipassana knowledges. You don't have much wish about them. So even the vipassana knowledges you have abandoned. You know that wish to have them. That's also tanha, no? So you have abandoned that. You simply, I'm going to have a little nap. I have a little break. Let me have a cup of tea. So likewise, you abandon all those responsibilities, all those tasks, all those sort of burdens. And now mind feel more relaxed. Now immediately an insight can happen. Now that's why, that's what exactly happened to Venerable Ananda. Probably you have heard, all of you have heard. So he was trying so hard to become an arahant, because he on tomorrow he has the big examination, with all the other arahants, and he is invited, but he is not yet an arahant. So he is trying hard to become an arahant, but he couldn't. But later he given it up. Let me have a rest. But just before get into the bed, he became an arahant. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So I think as as we go along this practice one day, because earlier when you start all this, you have all kinds of ideas of wanting to be this and that. But now at this stage, I just let things happen. And I don't bother. I mean, whatever happens, happens.
Exactly.
That's all that matters.
Exactly.
And then, if something is going to happen, it will happen. If it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. So
yes.
That is my attitude now. But
correct. Very good. Yeah. So that should be the attitude.
So that should
be the attitude.
So,
at the beginning, we have some kind of a controlling, manipulating kind of a mindset. But later, it's kind of more admitting, accepting, just being adjusting ourselves, recognizing the way it is, allowing things to happen naturally. So that kind of an attitude.
Because anyway, the bhavana is only one aspect of this whole process of going into the spiritual path, no bhante.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is also, you know, we have to do the correct things that the Buddha has said. So we have to also live the Dhamma as much as anything else, no bhante.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to really have get into this path, the spiritual path, what the Buddha has spoken about, the four stages, even then, it's not only the bhavana, you have to do the sila as well as the samadhi and develop your panya. So
mm-hmm.
it's a three-stage process. Is
yeah,
that right,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So three stages in the sense doesn't mean that you have to implement them one after the other, so they are interrelated.
No.
They are fairly interrelated,
yeah.
One supporting the other one, so that's they are quite interrelated.
Absolutely. So you're doing it all together. I mean,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
In the way we can do it as human beings and whatever circumstances, and you have to have it has to be conducive and the conditions also have to be there. No, depending on all of that, you're doing what you can do.
And on the other hand, it doesn't mean that you completely give up your daily mundane activities. Suppose you are a housewife, say you have to look after your children. I mean, you may be doing that as well. You being a spiritual person doesn't mean that you completely neglect all the household activities.
Absolutely. You can live the Dhamma by doing those things.
Exactly.
Not always, obviously. Especially if you have very smart children.
Yeah.
But, as you get older and get more mature and the children grow up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can live the Dhamma and do all your things and your job and everything. And you can apply the principles that the Buddha taught for all of those.
Yes. So, and the other thing is now, I mean, it doesn't mean, by the way, like you doing everything like a typical person who is more selfish and more targeting towards more, say, sensual gratification. So you may have a different way of doing things. Say, how you are handling your children, how you are handling your job, how you are handling various other responsibilities. Your approach may be different rather than another person who is trying to show off, rather than trying to get some marks, get some, you know, the praise from others, always trying to win the situation. So likewise, there are more selfish, more self-oriented kind of an approach available in the other people, and probably the practitioner may do the same thing, but same thing in the same task, but with a different approach. He may consider it as a duty, he may doing it wholeheartedly, more with compassion, and at the same time, when things are happening, unfavorable things are happening, he is more coping up with the situations, he is adjusting himself. So likewise, I mean, certain spiritual aspects are joining with the whole process.
Yes, yes. But my initial question was that in the bhavana, we just allow things to happen. What arises, arises. What arises, arises. And we just observe, and then we are is impermanent, and it is not self. That right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? That's what I do.
Yeah.
So I just continue doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Because these are the basic, the important understandings. And when things are available, then slowly mind may let go of all these conditioned phenomena and try to, you know, be dwelling in the non-grasping state of mind. Because what is there to grasp are the conditioned phenomena.
Yes.
So, and again grasping.
Yes.
So, therefore, mind will let go those conditioned phenomena and try to dwell without grasping anything. So, it, and then the mind may recognize it as a comfortable dwelling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that also, after a while, one comes into a situation where you're just very, very comfortable and you're just there.
Mm.
That's all. And
yeah.
So then you're aware of it.
You are aware of it, and again you are taking care that you are not preparing a self. So that is, I mean, when you are coming to an ungrasping state, that doesn't mean you are fully accomplished. Rather, you are using that state as another level to understand subtle defilements like eye making, mind making, etc., so that you become more refined or more purified.
These things are a process anyway, it happens gradually.
Yes, yes.
And we just let it happen.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yep, yeah.
thank you,
yeah.
Bhante.
Okay.
Bhante, I have another question about my meditation experience. So like I said, I started with Kayanupassana, naturally shifted to Chittanupassana, and then recently I was taught Vedanupassana, so I started practicing that, and my experience is quite different with this particular method of practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I see, I guess, more detailed moment-to-moment changes with the feelings, and the mind very quickly like turns bright and white, which is not something that I've experienced with some of the other methods of Vipassana. So I'm just wondering, is that a good sign that I should continue to maybe focus more on this particular method of Vipassana? Or is this pretty common for everyone, or is this my personal dispensation that I just lean towards maybe this particular method?
So I mean, method in the sense, I mean, is it giving more emphasis to observation, or I didn't feel any difference when you're talking. I didn't feel much difference.
I would say I probably see more detailed arising and passing, meaning, for example, if I can give, so let's say I'm practicing Kayanupassana.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I don't have another way to explain it, but maybe like I'm, you know, observing the first second, and then I skip to the fifth second, and then the tenth second. And then with Vedanupassana, I feel like maybe I'm noticing like second-to-second changes in arising and passing away.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's the only way.
So that means, I mean, if you consider the Kayanupassana level, you are able to recognize the object with certain skips. Certain skips, you only capable of recognizing it at first second, but second, third, fourth have skipped, now you are observing the fifth second. But in the Vedanupassana, you are able to observe each and every second. Is it what you want to tell? More?
So actually, as you said that, I don't think that's accurate either, because I can follow all of the changes with Kayanupassana. But I think maybe because Vedanupassana is a lot more subtle, I'm noticing a lot more of the subtle changes that is happening with Vedanupassana.
Right. But anyway, Jennifer, because of this practice, what is the outcome of your mind? Is it more ready to let go? Is it more ready to keep things aside and live more secluded? Trying to be more secluded. Is it what is the outcome of the practice?
Oh, okay. So with Kayanupassana, I feel like sometimes when, let's say, very unpleasant bodily sensations arise, there could be defilements that may arise in the mind, anger, a dislike, or sometimes greed, let's say. But with Vedanupassana, I feel like the mind is much more in a neutral state, neither grasping nor disliking, because it's just noticing just all of these changes and feelings.
Right. That's good. Then that is good. So basically, the outcome has to be non-grasping, having more detachment, and letting go. So if these things are more promoted, if these qualities are more promoted, that is a good practice. Because, you know, there may be various practices available, and the outcome has to be not really that you feel, overwhelmed by the detail, and more you being stuck in the detail. Rather, the seeing the detail has to have the impact, the effect coming from the detachment, dispassion. You are ready to let go. Why we see more details is to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose you have, a mango. So, and when you simply smell it, assume that you understood, okay, it is it's not a good mango, it's a stale mango. What's that called? Rotten mango, kind of. Okay, now you simply throw it away. Now, for another person, okay, he smell it, he got the bad feeling. Probably he get a suggestion, okay, it may be rotten, but he anyway cut it and open it up. There again he understood, okay, it is rotten. Now he is throwing it away. Now for both persons, the understanding is that it is rotten. But the second person has even he opened it up and he verified it in order to just before throwing it away. But the first person, immediately just after getting the rotten smell, he understood it is rotten and he is ready to throw it away. Ultimately, either we do a detailed examination or we do a short examination. If the mind is ready to let it go, if the mind is ready to throw it away, so that should be the outcome.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bhante. That
yeah.
clarified a lot.
Yeah,
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Okay, then if there is no any other question, we can wind up the session.
Yep, there's no more questions,
Bhante. Okay, fine. So we have spent about 1.5 hours discussing a sutta and again then involved with some interesting discussion. And with that, we were able to accumulate some merits. We share these merits with all the celestial beings. We share these merits with all the past relatives. And we share these merits with beings who are in need of merits. Again, we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.